your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Grass make the heaven the middle. We are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. I've got a really fine guest with us this evening, and she's written a fine book entitled Chemtrails, Harp, and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth. Welcome to our program, Elena Freeland.
Thanks for having me, George.
Boy, I'll tell you what, you're just a great lady, and I've had you once before a while back, but now I understand you're really branching off into a lot of other things. But first, tell our listening audience a little bit about your background and how you came to write this book.
I've been a writer for many years. I'm a ghost writer. I write people's books for them. I'm hired to do that. So I've researched a lot of things. I also have self-published a series called Sub Rosa America, for which I spent a decade researching the deep politics of the United States to figure out what had happened to this country between now and when I was a little girl. So I spent quite a bit of time collecting data on all manner of things having to do with politics. And I had two files, one on chemtrails, one on HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project up in Gakona, Alaska. And at that time, I didn't know that they were connected. I didn't know enough. And I was living in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And as life would have it, as destiny would have it, I became good friends with Clifford Carnicom, the independent scientist who really was the first one in the late 90s who was collecting debris coming down from the chemical trails being laid over northern New Mexico. Clifford was operating on a shoestring budget. He had been a Department of Defense and Bureau of Land Management scientist, but had quit those large agencies and was on his own. So we would go out to breakfast every few weeks, and we would end up talking about the chemical trails and what he was finding dropping from them, and was able to prove was actually dropping from them. And what he concentrated on were the fibers that were really impossible to destroy, and he had a lot of trouble breaking into them. They were on a nanoscale, so he needed very fine equipment, some of which he had, some of which he constructed out of necessity. And he was collecting people's saliva and blood at that time. And I was one of his participants. And I remember giving him my saliva after I did what he calls the red wine test. And then we saw the fibers in that. And then from my blood, we watched under a high-powered microscope as this, what he had decided was a genetically engineered creature, was eating the iron right out of my red blood cells. And I had heard that oxygen was about 16% less in human beings than it had been 20 years ago. And I saw it right there under the microscope that I had this Morgellons creature in me. Morgellons, in most people who know they have it, It makes very deep lesions in the skin. Probably the body's desire to throw them off. And I don't have that, but I know that they're in me. And I know that I have breathed them from the chemical trails. So that was really my first real life experience of the chemical trails high over my head. And after that, when I moved back up to the Pacific Northwest, a publisher I'd done some work for when I lived in England asked me if I thought I could write a book on chemtrails. And I agreed to do that, particularly since I'd been such good friends with Clifford, and I knew he could guide me in some aspects of it. So I began to research that, and that was about 2012. And the book finally came out in 2014, and since then, I have just finished the sequel to it on the Space Fence, and that will be out in September 2017, my publisher tells me.
Oh, boy, that is wonderful. Elena, you know, you've really dug this, dug out a lot of very interesting and insightful topics and subjects in your research, have you not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about research in this area, which is, by the way, if your listeners don't know, a national security issue. This is a highly classified project. Including the chemical trails and what is being loaded into them to be dropped down to the earth. And instead, when you listen to, like, the COP21 that was the conference in Paris last December, some listeners may have followed that. It was a big climate conference that there had been many smaller conferences preparing for that conference, because it was there that they signed off on the carbon tax that all nations have to pay according to the their carbon pollution, etc. And this is a big deal, because this is a big money maker. And they had been building toward this for the two decades that this program has been running. It's a geoengineering program that they always say they may have to do because of climate change and the heavy penalty of carbons from our automobiles and, of course, military use, et cetera. So this was... At these conferences, it's never mentioned how this program has been up and running for two decades without citizen confirmation, without ever asking citizens about it. And I believe that it is a series of experiments that they're running on humanity, on the forests, on the soil, on all life forms in the biosphere, in order to make their provisions for a future that will really be, if they have their way, a synthetic reality replacing the natural reality. And that's only one of the operations going on under these chemical trails. And I could, George, if you'd like, refresh your listeners' memory about what this what it means to have the chemicals coming out of the combustion chamber.
Yes, do that. Elena, that's very interesting. Do that.
All right, because this is it's not just as a the sort of flotsam and jetsam that is would come as debris out of combustion chambers of jet engines, because we're so addicted to fast and easy travel at high altitudes. No, this is a military program that has now brought in the commercial jet corporations. And so it's not just military jets that are laying these trails, it's commercial as well. So this is a real money maker for a lot of corporate, of the corporations in the military-industrial complex. But when these, this fuel is burned and it's gone all the way from JP4 to JP8 fuel, it's specially treated. It's so specially treated that, many of the ingredients in the fuel are classified. And that means they're military. That means they're national security. So we know, we who are the researchers in the chemtrails movement, despite all the name calling of conspiracy theorists and now they're using some other term, false news. Despite all that, we're on the trail of a classified project that entails human beings breathing in chemicals coming from the combustion chamber of jet engines, and those compounds that are being spewed in the high altitudes are really purposeful. They're not just what you have to breathe because you love jet airplanes and they have to fly on something. It's not about that only. It is about seven different operations that the military has going. I certainly owe it to Clifford Carnicom in his 2005 film, Aerosol Crimes, for spelling out these divisions. So I'll just run briefly over them.
Yes, go ahead.
The first one is, of course, weather modification. And we are already experiencing and have been now for, I'd say, a decade and a half of this. We have engineered weather. And this technology, starting with the chemical trails, and the next part of it would be the ionospheric heaters like HAARP and various radar installations with being able to zap lasers and microwave are part of the ability to move weather systems, even to move and modify the jet stream that we so depend upon to move our weather systems from west to east. So that's a huge part of this. And the weather systems are very experimental, at least from my vantage point. I see that they are experimenting. Every year seems to have a different theme. We've had the hurricane theme. We've had the tornado theme. We've had ice nucleation theme, flooding. All of these, drought would be one very particular one in California. All of these are not accidental. These are not acts of God. These are all anthropogenic. They're man-made. They're man-conceived. And, of course, control over the weather can be a very astute political and economic warfare instrument. Certainly you can see how it could be used politically to force nations to obey, to submit to various things, or they will be hit with weather that will drag their economy down into the dirt. So that's part of how it's used. It's used economically as actually either to destroy an economy or to even boost an economy because, for example, after Hurricane Katrina in 2005, in came the Halliburtons, all the construction companies. The poor were moved out of their homes because they were destroyed or flooded, and the real estate was sold for a pittance of what it was worth because people were in an emergency situation. And many of the insurance companies make a fortune off of this. The weather derivatives out of the Chicago Mercantile make a fortune out of what Naomi Klein years ago called disaster capitalism. And this is how you could use weather modification, and it is being used. The second operation, military in nature, is the environmental geophysical modification. And this, too, is again, very interesting, going back to Hurricane Katrina down in the Gulf of Mexico. You remember how there was the oil spill down there and how they infused a chemical called Corexit into the Gulf in order to gobble up the oil spill. Well, that's turned into a massive disaster, very, very profitable for the petrochemical companies and all the people along the shoreline of the Gulf of Mexico. Their real estate, they've lost real estate. They've because the Corexit actually eats along shorelines. And so this ability to alter the threshold of land, in recently we had a big 7.8 earthquake on South Island in New Zealand. And it is my theory, and theory only at this point, that New Zealand is possibly being terraformed for a different type of island split between the Chinese in the north and the Americans in the south. So that's another operation we're going to see a lot more of through collapsing sinkholes, salt domes, collapsing shorelines of various waters like the Atlantic and the Gulf. And so that's how we can look at it as an operation run by the military. The third would be the electromagnetic operations, which go all the way into the near-Earth orbit. So what we're talking about is this ability to change the atmosphere down where we are in the lower atmosphere is also going on up in space in the near-Earth orbit between here and the edge of the ionosphere. And so many, many experiments are being run in near-Earth orbit that people are blaming on aliens and ET and you know, whatever they can come up with without knowing the science, because we're not being taught this science. We're not being informed. There's a huge cover-up going that, oh, this is climate change, this is global warming, disaster is coming if we don't cough up our carbon taxes. So this electromagnetic operations goes all the way to making sprites out of lightning, making Birkeland currents, drawing them down into our lower atmosphere. Many things that used to go on higher up are now being done right above our heads, and so we hear hums and growls and trumpet sounds coming from, we don't know where. It's actually coming from the Earth, because they're able to do tomography, which is also altering the Earth. Many, many electromagnetic operations are available now because the atmosphere has been entirely electrified by the combination of the chemicals coming out of jet and airplanes and the radio frequency or microwaves or lasers that are zapping them and electrifying of the sky, so that when we see those trails coming out of the jets that then filter out, spread out into a cirrus cloud cover.
They stay up there for hours, don't they?
Oh, they stay. I mean, the trails themselves are not contrails. There is no water vapor.
A water vapor trail would disappear in a matter of a few seconds, 15,
exactly.
20 seconds. But these stay up there for hours and become clouds, you know?
They do. And that cloud cover is chemical in nature. That's the important thing.
Right, right.
When you look up, you're not looking at the same cirrus cloud cover you might have experienced 30, 40 years ago, which would have had a very, you know, particulates in it and water vapor. No, this is all particulates that have been electrified in an atmosphere that we're now forced to breathe. And that atmosphere is electrical in nature. It's like a battery. It's like turning the entire sky into an antenna. It's like there's a Tesla dome over us now of an electromagnetic nature for military operations. And I think that you can see how these military operations are, if they're classified, who's going to talk about them anywhere, at any conference, in any mainstream media newspaper? It's just simply not going to be talked about. And in fact, The military is using this for their own C4 operations, and that's command, control, communications, and cyber warfare. This is what they need this for, many, many, many wireless operations. And it's probably behind how finally consumers were given the cell phones about the late 90s or 2000, somewhere around there. We were given the cell phones that the military had for decades because they needed more of the cell towers to go up. They needed those towers. The GWEN system, the Ground Wave Emergency Network, was simply not enough. They needed more. And now it's not just the cell towers that you can tell are cell towers. They're disguising them as fir trees and crosses on churches and all manner of things. And I hear that there are very tiny ones that they're putting up everywhere that are disguised. So they needed us to join them with our complicity and get those cell phones that we cannot do without. I personally do not own one simply because I know this. I know what the purpose is. And this is part of the fourth operation, military operations, in what the military calls dual use. They use the consumer's side of the technology so that all telecommunications companies like AT&T, Verizon, et cetera, all of them are military contractors now. This is the militarization of civilian life, and it's being done very covertly, sort of slow-boiling frog style, but it is being done. And when Dr. Rosalie Bertel was still alive, an amazing epidemiologist and a nun, she specialized in ionizing radiation. And she understood this danger very well in her book, Planet Earth, The Latest Weapon of War, A Critical Study into the Military and the Environment. And she said this, and I quote, "The ability of the HARP/Space Lab/Rocket combination to deliver very large amounts of energy comparable to a nuclear bomb anywhere on Earth by means of laser and particle beams is frightening," end of quote. And that's what lies behind this technology as well. Among the military operations are weapons of extraordinary power that we now know are called directed energy weapons.
Well, now, you wrote an article recently for Nixos, a magazine, Electromagnetic Weapons, is that right?
Yes, I did, and I wrote that in 2014. I've gotten a lot of people have contacted me about that, because these directed energy weapons, if you want to know what they look like, I think of TWA Flight 800. I think of the Space Shuttle Challenger.
Okay.
I think of the 9/11 towers.
Okay. Right. Okay.
And these are all, in my opinion, these are all directed energy weapons that we didn't know what we were looking at.
Right, exactly.
Being hidden from the public.
I think Judy Wood and I both agreed when we interviewed her for 2 hours a while back that they have the technology, we think, to neutralize this Fukushima radiation, but we don't think they're going to do that because it would uncover some of their top secret weapon systems. What do you think?
I think that's very possible, and I assume you and Judy might have touched upon this amazing, to me, Iranian scientist, Dr. Keshe, K-E-S-H-E. He claims to have approached Japan after the Fukushima catastrophe, which, by the way, I maintain in my Chemtrails HARP book was a HARP operation. He presented to the Japanese government a technology he has come up with that would have completely erased all radiation, and he was refused. And I don't know what that's about, and I can only imagine that some of this technology, as Judy Wood says in her really great book, Where Did the Towers Go, It could be used for good, such as
ameliorating
hurricanes and tornadoes.
Right.
I mean, it could be, but because the military is in charge of this program now and virtually of our atmosphere and our near-Earth orbit, that's not going to happen because they're weaponizing everything they can lay their hands on.
Well, you know, in your title of your book, you use full-spectrum dominance. That actually is a military term.
It is. It's a doctrine.
That's right. It comes out of dimensions of the battle space, see?
That's right.
And it goes terrestrial, aerial, maritime, subterranean, now, and so forth. Now, let me ask you another question here that has come up. The National Geospatial Intelligence Agency?
Yes.
It figures prominently in this whole scenario, does it not?
Yeah. Is that the NGA?
Yeah, it's the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is, NGA, for short. Yeah, that's right.
It reminds me of what was the name of it? We had another agency that was secret for about 30 years. Nobody even knew it existed, that was handling all of the things in the near-Earth.
Well, they had the National Reconnaissance Office.
Yes, the
NRO. And
I think
that preceded this National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. But
did it replace it, or I think the NRO is still running.
It may be, but it might be more administrative than anything. But this new spatial thing has a capability. It has the third largest building in the Washington D.C. area.
Yes. Oh, no, you're absolutely right, George. The NGA is a real sleeper.
Yes.
And we've got to keep our eyes on it. And I have it in the Space Fence book. I go into it for a few pages.
Right.
But I haven't really explored who is on its board.
Yeah,
that needs to be done.
That is something that is bigger than, I got onto it years ago when one of my men out of the Washington, D.C. area put me on to it, you know, one of my advisors.
Great, great. And so the military operations, that's the fourth operation.
Okay.
That I mentioned.
Yeah, right.
It's huge. And
sure.
It's all encompassing. So that when we see meteors falling from the sky, we're told they're meteors. I highly think they are not meteors. I think they are, again, plasma is being experimented with in our lower troposphere and in the stratosphere. So let me talk a little just at that point about
plasma. Sure, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
People don't realize what plasma is. So they think of the plasma in their blood. This is different.
Right.
This is the fourth state of matter, and it often presents as a gas. First, it can be a gas, and it can also be a fire. It has substance to it, but it's difficult to see with our senses. So we now have instruments that can detect plasma and can create plasma. When we're looking up at the sky, what we're seeing in that cirrus cloud cover I mentioned that is absolutely moisture-free and is particularly dry, as chemicals can be, what we're looking at is a plasma formation, a gas formation of plasma. And this plasma can, with radio frequency and being zapped by various things, can be made to be quite substantial. It can, I think I've seen pictures, I certainly am amazed, of clouds, just solo clouds sitting on the Earth that have somehow sort of cruise down to the terrestrial and simply rest there. And when people have attempted to touch them, their hand goes straight through. This reminds me of photographs I've seen from the 19th century when Sir William Crookes, who is considered to be the father of modern chemistry, he was also an avid occultist, and I think he was a Freemason. And he certainly was involved in what we call table tapping or seances and that sort of thing. And I remember seeing photographs of ectoplasm forming from a clairvoyant that was a substance and would be sort of take on the ghostly figure of a human being. And I can't help but feel that this was plasma and that it was somehow contrived to be created by Crookes somehow, because he's always in those photographs. So it's a chemical creation, plasma. It's a heat creation, and our skies are now loaded with plasma. And now comes many experiments on plasma that the scientists are pursuing with great gusto. And many of these scientists, if you're wondering why you're not hearing from them, they've not only signed confidentiality agreements because all of this is classified, but they're also operating on a need-to-know basis, so they probably don't realize what the other scientists are doing. The right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. And it's a completely military grant moneyed. It's taxpayer money, yes, but it's under the aegis of the military, because all of this technology is being militarized to be used for, quote, defense, unquote, but I would say it's being used for aggression. And so the plasma part is really important, because this can, if all the universe is made of plasma, and it's about 99.9% of the universe, then we are too, and we are subject to these experiments as well in our physical bodies. So it's a great concern to me what the military is doing with this. This gets to the fifth operation, the biological operations. I mentioned what Clifford Carnicom was doing. By the way, you can read all his papers on this at carnicominstitute.org. Clifford was talking about the Morgellons creature, the genetically engineered creature, which is he's renamed the cross-domain bacteria because it actually has portions of all three kingdoms of nature in it. And then there's also coming down are fungi from the upper atmosphere, which we are breathing in, all on a nanoparticulate level. You're not going to be able to see these particles. They're very, very tiny. We now will hear from NASA or even Google, Microsoft, whoever, that they are releasing trillions of nano-sized sensors into the environment, which can be remotely contacted to download the data they're collecting. We are breathing in those sensors as well. There are microprocessors now on the nanoscale. I assume that these sensors are all loaded with microprocessors. How else can they be remotely contacted and be able to download the information they're taking in? Those sensors with microprocessors are in our bloodstream. They're in our tissues. I assume they can be still remotely contacted by guys at their laptops sitting in Denver or having a piña colada down in Phoenix. So this is our condition, and all of this is biological because it's impacting all of the biosphere. Everyone, every living creature, is impacted by this irresponsible program that went ahead. There have been no experiments on nanotechnology. It's all gung-ho. It's the typical attitude in America of the military and the corporations of, gee, let's try it and see what happens. It's as though we're all expendables in these experiments they insist on subjecting citizens to. They can't do it by international laws. They can't just go into other countries and do it, though they do try that, I'm sure. But they that's why they'll experiment on their own people, if you were wondering. And another question I get, and I might as well deal with it now, is why would they do this given that their children are going to suffer from this? They're going to suffer from this. They're going to be breathing the same stuff we're breathing. Well, my opinion is, first of all, they're building, the elites, the global elites, are building their mansions underground now. That's been made public. So they obviously know something about what's going on above us. And I would imagine that just as they did with AIDS, which was created by the World Health Organization with the assistance of Dr. Robert Gallo, I assume they have the antidote. And they're able to take a pill, get a shot, breathe some from a machine, have tremendously powerful HEPA filters on their homes. I assume that they've got that handled, and that if you're in the in crowd, you're going to know about this technology, and you're not just going to make a lot of money off of it, but you're also going to be able to protect those that you love. So that would be my answer to that. So the biological goes all the way from the Morgellons or the cross-domain bacteria to the fungi. It also includes polymers. There's a polymer sheath on the cross-domain bacteria, and we're breathing those in as well. They're in our bodies. And all of this is challenging our immune system. Now add Monsanto's GMO program. As you know, Monsanto came out with an aluminum-resistant seed exactly when the chemtrails started flying. And the chemtrails are loaded with aluminum oxide and all on a nanoscale. So GMOs and Monsanto GMOs and other GMOs from other corporations in the chemical business, they're all delivery systems as well. I can only imagine what kinds of chemical signatures are in the foods that most people eat. I eat all organic. I never, if I go to a restaurant, I will be eating GMOs, I'm sure. But I go rarely, and I eat very well and attempt to ameliorate, minimize what is going on and how the environment around me has been weaponized. Different pathogens will probably be piggybacked onto these mylar polymer fibers. Not just the cross-domain bacteria. So I think we all have to think of our bloodstream and our immune system as in a precarious, assaulted world now, and we have to take care of them. We can't wait for our doctors to do that. If you go with a lesion that looks the least Morgellons to a doctor and you see little fibers sticking their heads out of these lesions and you tell the doctor that, he's going to send you the psych ward and say that you have his diagnosis will be delusional parasitosis. He will not take a sample from the lesions and put them under a high-powered microscope.
Well, some of those fibers, as I understand it, are not able to be typed even. See?
Not able to be typed?
Yeah, some of the fibers coming up are synthetic, clear-looking. And I understand that we had a Morgellons tasting party years ago at Brave New Books here in Austin.
Yeah.
And all of us that took the test, we didn't do the wine, but we did the grape juice test. Yeah. And all of us came up with fibers in our blood.
That's right.
And then, of course, at that time, and this was years ago, they weren't able to type the fibers that were coming up out of these sores of Morgellon victims or patients.
Well, I know one thing, George.
Yeah.
When Clifford started his research, like he was around the early 2000s when he was deep into it.
Well, I interviewed him and another lady, I believe, back then.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I don't know if he told you about the 186 hits he got on his site from all the alphabet soup agencies in
Washington. I didn't know about that. I haven't been in contact with him.
Yes. I mean, that was an eye opener.
Right.
I mean, if they can, they know what these are. Somebody knows what these are.
Right.
If you go to the doctor, yeah, a lot of doctors are not on board. They're not insiders. They don't know what this is. They're not being told by the AMA. It's not in the DSM 5 or whatever it is that the psychiatrists operate out of.
Right.
I mean, this is all classified.
Yes, it is.
And that leaves the people in fear, and I mean, families are falling apart, marriages are ending, communities are at risk. because we're being so lied to. It's just got to end.
Well, you know, though, Steve, you know, Quell has that dead scientist list on his site.
Yes.
And there were just, there's over 100 people on the list, and I think 70 to 80% are microbiologists.
Yes. Well, that's from years ago, and now what's happening is there's a spate of, I think it's up to 17 or so now, naturopaths and physicians.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Route, they're all dead.
Right. They all got on to what's going on the global scale, and they were liquidated, it seems like to me. That's what I think.
And if I were to point a finger, I would have to point it at the medical industry and Big Pharma.
That's
where I would point to look first. So now, all right,
biological. Go ahead. Okay.
But now I'm on number six of the operations is intelligence and surveillance.
Okay.
Operations. And this is where we get into the space fence. What we have going up around us here on planet Earth that we can see is a smart grid. And the smart grid utilizes smart meters, the cell phone towers, the NEXRAD, big golf ball looking radomes that you'll see near radio stations in your area, big golf ball looking, they're really ionospheric heaters is what they are. They're on oil rigs, they're offshore, they're mobile. Many of them now are getting smaller in size because they're really working on this technology to get this smart grid absolutely perfect and tuned and ready to go. You're talking about wind farms, you're talking about fracking. All of these have the same chemical signatures going into the ground that is being dropped on us from the sky. All of them are being pulsed, being calibrated to pulse at a certain frequency that it resonates as an entire huge machine is really what it is here on Earth, this smart grid.
Well, this technocracy seems to come to me. Patrick Woods came up. They're building a technocracy here. You know what I mean? That's what they're doing.
Yes, that's the human part.
Right,
the part that we're going to experience instead of democracy.
Yeah, a technocracy which they'll regulate energy and all these smart meters and have us on some kind of a plan, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's all part of Agenda. Agenda 21
yes.
has been renamed Agenda 2030.
Yes, 2030 now.
They've thrown that bone out to us.
Right.
Done by 2030, which means it'll be done much sooner. Whenever they give us a long leash into the future, you know that they're just about done.
Exactly.
And I would say that everything's going to be ready by next year. 2017 is the big year.
Okay.
And this whole ground instrument, the smart grid, is going to be calibrated exactly to CERN and the space fence. Now, let me define the space fence.
Okay.
Because intelligence and surveillance is the name of the game with the space fence. But when we think intelligence and surveillance, we're thinking, okay, satellites can read our license plates. Satellites can read a postage stamp on a letter. They know where we are. Edward Snowden came out and told us that, though I knew about it 10 years before. They know exactly where we are. They've got the GPS satellites. They're protecting them to within an inch of their lives because without the GPS, they'll be blind. So everything's set up now. And what is happening in order to make sure that this is a lockdown on planet Earth is the sounding rockets that are being sent skyward for various either it's the private corporation sending them like Elon Musk's SpaceX, or it's military sounding rockets that have various experiments they're running at the near Earth orbit. But what they're spewing behind them when they're going skyward is not just the flotsam and jetsam that has to come from a powerful combustion going on to get the rocket up there. That too is classified. That formula for that particular fuel is classified. And in it, you can count on it. You can take it to the bank that they're going to have aluminum oxide in it. They're going to have lithium in it. They're going to probably have titanium in it. And all that spewing, not only is it going right over the people who are unfortunate enough to have their homes in that flight pattern, but it's going to go up to near-Earth orbit, and it's going to start circling the planet for however long before the rocket comes back down. But during that process, all of those nanoparticulates of conductive metals like aluminum, lithium, and titanium, they're all going to go in. They're going to go around the Earth, the edge, and then they're going to fall into centrifugal force, and they're going to be caught, and they're going to be sent down toward the equator. And around the equator is a ring forming. And if I were to be in space so I could see that ring, it would look a lot like Saturn's rings.
Okay.
And that's going to be the sort of sandwiching effect between the ground system of the smart grid. Remember, everything's calibrated to work with everything else. That smart grid now has the space fence up around the Earth,
okay,
orbiting around the equator as a sort of, again, an antenna, and a really powerful antenna, given that our atmosphere is completely ionized now, completely plasmaized, between the ground system and the sky system. You have a very powerful well forming around the Earth that activated, if indeed they wish to activate the entire thing at once with the exact right frequency pulsed at the exact right calibration, you're going to have a Tesla dome around the entire Earth. And that's why I call this next book the Space Fence Lockdown. This lockdown will not only be for surveillance in space of space junk and incoming missiles and whatever they want to say, but it's also the eyes in the sky are turned toward the Earth, so that all of the Earth can be controlled by an AI system, artificial intelligence. This is what the SDI program had hoped under Reagan, Cheney, and George H.W. Bush. This was their plan back in 83. But they had to table it because they did not have that ionized sky. They didn't have it. They had to create HARP with Bernard Eastland's patent first in order to get into the ionosphere, bubble it out, suck our atmosphere up into the ionosphere, pull it back down, and get it where it got a really juicy start here in the troposphere, that then they could keep activated by lasers, by radiation, including, yes, radiation like the Fukushima thing. All of these ionized and non-ionized radiation instruments are hands on deck now to keep the atmosphere ionized. And what they're really kind of interested in, I think, is who can evolve, how many human beings, given that they think we're just weak and need massive enhancement, how many human beings will be able to evolve to handle an atmosphere of radiation? They're not concerned that the forests will die, and they are dying in California. They're not concerned because we'll be eating GMO foods that are created out of a test tube, and they can now because of the genome project and the genetic information, the DNA signatures that they know and have been collecting for decades. They know how to make faults for us. They can recreate for us. They can recreate anything. So they're not concerned about the destruction factor that is going on now as they push toward a future in which we will all be controlled, all have a hive mind, and they'll be able to pick out individuals and program them individually while the rest of the population is pulsed with a sort of compliance with a sort of weakened will, and the whole dream of the Renaissance, of the Reformation, of the Enlightenment, all that European impulse that came in hundreds of years ago, just forget it. Human beings are to be a hive mind under an AI system. That's it. That's transhumanism. And that is what I believe this is, what we're witnessing now, is the attempt to lift this sort of Promethean dream of these elites to be able to have the technology that can really do empire, really do global control. And that's how I see that sixth intelligence surveillance. We've got to redefine surveillance to see that it actually has to do with control right down to the DNA level, especially now that they have terahertz waves, the ones that you experience when you fly and you go through TSA. It's actually shredding your DNA as you go through.
Right.
So that's the sixth one. And let me just quickly finish the seventh, which is the most far out.
Okay.
And gets right down to the space age. Clifford and I came up with this together, I believe. It was the seventh operation added to the sixth. And that is the detection and obscuration of exotic propulsion systems. And what we mean by this is certainly we have had anti-gravity ships since we brought the Nazis over under Operation Paperclip. There's no doubt in my mind about that. Anti-gravity, that would be Townsend Brown's ideas. That would be the ideas of Tesla. I mean, all stolen ideas. And now that the atmosphere is ionized and is particle rich, and you need particles in order to have this sort of technology work, then we can have these ships, but we're not ready to tell the secret that we have these ships. And so a lot of people are seeing triangular ships in some of these plasma clouds. They're actually seeing plasma clouds seemingly creating more plasma as if it were exhaust. Given the cloaking technology that the military has, I don't need to import ET or aliens in order to imagine that we are unable to see many of these ships, these vector ships in the air, up in our clouds. Also, they may be using it with their plasma-sensitive instruments to really see other nations' ships and possibly interdimensional ships. I'm not going to eliminate that simply because they've coated it with fantasy and silliness. Possible interdimensional ships coming in because we now have a plasma-rich environment that would be very friendly to them. So this is a possibility, and we're living to see it, which for me is quite remarkable that I would live in a time where so much is in transition, so much is the misfortune of leaving so much behind. I'm very sad about that, and I know it's not necessary. If we had leaders who were dedicated to developing humanity and helping it in its evolution in consciousness, we would be fortunate indeed. We have a technology that can do amazing things, but what's it being used for? It's being armed. It's being militarized one more time. So that's how those seven operations are all served by this technology that is never mentioned in the press or at any conference that I've heard of, and I know it's all going on right now.
Wow, gosh, boy, that was quite a pronouncement and speech and lecture that you gave us today. This space fence, it has recently been finished. Is that right? This book.
Well, they're finishing up, I can't pronounce it, I always forget it, but the Kwajalein Atoll out in the South Pacific.
Oh, yes,
Yes, it's going up. I think that also there's a Ronald Reagan installation there. I can't remember what it is. But that's going up. They've had the space fence around. We had it running through the south and going southwest. But as I said, it really didn't have the power that was needed until the ionized atmosphere. This has given the keys of the kingdom to the military on the SDI program, the Star Wars program.
Right. You know, I'm looking now. We have this up on our site to complement your just great speech and lecture this evening. But we have a LockheedMartin.com site, and there's photographs there of their site there out there in the Marshall Islands. And so we're going to make that's being part of your program tonight. You know, your depth of knowledge and research is just phenomenal, Elena. And I must thank you for all the work I know you've spent endless hours in researching this.
Absolutely. It is. And it's like the legend of Isis and Osiris, isn't it? Where Osiris is killed by Set and his body is strewn all over the Delta. And she has to go and look at every piece to put every piece back together. That's how I've felt. It's a collage experience. And if it had not been for Billy Hayes, the harp man, I would have been working at it much longer. He was invaluable to me because he's a hands-on tower erector, and he worked for years for military contractors who worked for three-letter agencies.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to have another program and incorporate him into that next time.
Yes.
And I think that would add a great deal too to a wider, you know, perspective and so forth and so on.
Yeah.
I came out of the Army Security Agency out of Germany, West Berlin, and so I had just a very small experience level back when I was in my 20s, you know, because we worked for the NSA back then.
Oh, yes.
And then they morphed this into the INSCOM, which is Intelligence Security Command, which changed things. But so we were not into these issues, though. We were into just communications, interception, and signal intelligence, interception, stuff like that.
Right.
But you have about a minute or two. Could you give us some concluding remarks then? About 2 minutes?
Well, my hope is that people will not just immediately go into fear over this information. Every era that we live in, we human beings live in, has its challenges. For instance, in the Middle Ages, it would have been perhaps the Catholic Church and domination of the Church. Now we have the domination of a military that is militarizing everything. And that would include the military-industrial intelligence complex that Eisenhower attempted to warn us of on his way out of office. So a lot of water has flowed under the bridge. No fear, no fear, no fear. I have no fear. On we go. And we must have the knowledge so that we can make the decisions for our lives and our children's lives and our grandchildren's lives and prepare them for the world that is already on its way.
Well, Elena, well, thank you. That was a very, very beautiful concluding statement there. We want to thank you again for being with us this evening. And we've got all the information about your book up there. We've added a few other click-offs on the space fence. And certainly we're waiting anxiously for the release and publishing of your next book entitled Space Fence. Okay?
All right. Thank you, George.
Okay, Elena. Thank you very much. Good night.
Good night.
We want to thank Elena Freeland again for that fine presentation that she made about chemtrails and so forth. But I thank you, Elena Freeland, again. And coming up on this second hour will be with Patrick Wood, and we're going to be discussing technocracy rising and the new technocracy that is trying to be brought about. But that comes up next, so keep listening. Thank you.